Hey friend, do you want to offer meaningful learning solutions that create behavior change, fit in the flow of work, and yield real results for your nonprofit? If yes, this is the podcast for you. Join me as I explore instructional design and leadership development best practices, as well as change management, belonging, and influence. If we haven't met yet, I'm Heather, and I've been in your shoes. I'm a learning and development consultant and founder of Skill Masters Market. Before starting my business, I led learning and leadership development initiatives for a large national nonprofit. I know what it's like to need to develop your staff quickly and effectively and to build the relationships and cut through the organizational layers to be successful. And I'm bringing all of that to you in this podcast. So block your calendar, turn off your Teams or Slack chat, and let's dive in. It's learning for good. Remember when you first met your partner or your spouse or your best friend? You probably wanted to know everything about them. And the more you learned, the more intrigued you were. So you'd spend more time together and you'd ask more questions, and then you would learn even more about them. And I bet over time, you were able to anticipate what the other person would say or do, how they would react, what they would order at a restaurant, where they wanted to go over the weekend, how they traveled, and so many other things. We want to do that for our learners too. Maybe we won't find out their favorite ice cream flavor, but we do want to understand them and their needs. So when I decided to do an episode on identifying learner needs, I wanted to showcase an organization that used multiple approaches and saw results from their work. And that's why I've invited Trang Trung Hill to join me today to explore a project that we've worked on together, as well as many other projects they have going on inside their nonprofit. And Trang will share how her nonprofit identified what staff needed to do, what they needed to be able to do to work with new American communities more effectively. I can't wait to dive into this conversation with Trang. I'm so excited to have Trang here with me today. Trang has worked in the nonprofit sector for over 17 years. Her nonprofit career started with the YMCA of Greater Long Beach in California, where she worked with immigrant youth and families in after-school programming. In 2013, following 8 years with the YMCA of Greater Long Beach, Trang joined the YMCA of the USA. YUSA is the national resource office for the nation's Ys. There are currently 2,700 Ys in 10,000 communities across the United States. And currently, as the Director of Newcomer Engagement and Global Services, Trang leads and coordinates efforts to strengthen the capacity of local Ys to work with newcomer immigrant communities and successfully impact diverse communities. She provides national strategic oversight of the growing network of YMCA New American Welcome Centers, the YMCA's participation in National Welcoming Week, and external partnerships. Trang also serves as a national steering committee member for the YMCA's Asian and Pacific Islander Employee Resource Group. Trang has a passion for youth development and supporting Asian American and Pacific Islander leaders and communities. During her free time, Trang is a community organizer and is part of the co-founding team of Celebrate Argyle. Celebrate Argyle is a community initiative that aims to shine a spotlight on immigrant-owned restaurants, businesses, and the rich diversity of Chicago's AAPI communities on Asia Argyle. Celebrate Argyle aims to amplify the community's rich immigrant stories, those that shape, define, and impact the Asia Argyle neighborhood. Trang also serves on the board of Project Vision, a local nonprofit serving the youth and families in Chicago's Chinatown community. As the board chair, Trang's vision and hope is to continue to evolve Project Vision's strategic goals and objectives to ensure that Project Vision meets the needs of the students, families, and communities they serve. They recognize that to remain relevant as a youth-serving organization, they must continue to be innovative and equitable in how they serve, but more importantly, understand their changing communities so that they can build the next generation of leaders. Welcome, Trang.
Hi, Heather.
That is an impressive bio.
Oh my goodness, I'm sitting here listening to you say this. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Can accomplish a lot in 17 years or whatever we said that was, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm so excited to have you on this podcast to share so much of your experience with us. I always like to ask before we jump in to just learn a little bit more. Obviously, I have a bio that I can read, I can share, and let everyone know a little bit about you. But in your own words, could you share a little bit about your career journey? I feel like we just gain so much insight when we hear that from people specifically.
Absolutely, for sure. So I was actually on a teaching path in my undergrad and actually found the YMCA on a Craigslist ad around, do you love working with children? Do you like to read? Do you like to help children with homework? And I was like, yes, yes, yes. So let me go ahead and apply for this part-time role. I, at that time, was working retail and I needed to get out of retail. So I interviewed for the role for an after-school program leader and got the job and was actually placed at my old elementary school. So that alone was just really just amazing to be able to be at the school that I grew up in and the neighborhood and the community I was in. And even seeing some of the school staff that were there when I was there as a kid was just mind-blowing. So after that role, I just started falling in love with working with youth in a different capacity and maybe thought teaching is not maybe my thing. Maybe it's working in youth in a different space and just helping them thrive and grow and doing all the fun things and not necessarily, I commend teachers out there. Y'all have a hard role and hard job, but this was a way to work with youth still in a way that was more open and more flexible, I think. So after that, it's essentially what they call history. I've been with the Y since then. So I finished my undergrad and went into a full-time role with the YMCA in Long Beach, started overseeing multiple after-school sites and then getting into a little bit of the diversity, equity, inclusion work and helped develop a partnership with the Cambodia YMCA. So getting that global DEI perspective and then found myself at the national office doing some of this work. And now it's evolved into really looking at how do we better support our immigrant refugee communities, which I think is amazing since I have a real close heart to that work because my parents are also refugees. So in a nutshell, that in those 18 years.
It flies by. You've done some amazing work and I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today. And I think we're going to be able to learn from you in a twofold way. One, I know that there are other nonprofits out there that are working with new American communities. And so hearing your insights and what that looks like for you and your experiences, I think will be really, really good. But there are also a lot of nonprofits, regardless of who they're working with, that are trying to figure out what their learners need, whether it's staff or quote unquote customers within their nonprofit. They're trying to figure out what is it that they need? How can we develop their skills? How can we do this in a way that's really effective? And so I'm really excited today to hear from you and what you're doing to identify learner needs specifically with the programs and services that you're offering around new American communities. So before we jump into kind of the training piece of it, talk to me a little bit about some of the programs or services that your nonprofit is offering to new American communities and what makes that or the set of programs or services unique to other things that might be offered.
So what we've developed is really looking at how to better organize the way that we serve the communities, right? So a lot of it is a methodology and framework. And another one is a very like concrete curriculum program that we've developed. So the first one I want to reference is what we call our New American Welcome Center model and framework, which helps provide folks the ability to be able to organize their work in an intentional effort. So for example, looking at how do we provide direct services, referral services if we're not the ones that are providing it, and how do we also bring in the community bridge building element of it, of not just working with a specific population or community, but also how do we bridge the differences and help folks build those connections or relationships. So that's one. The second one would be around the Youth Unity Project, which is really focused on bringing immigrant youth and receiving youth, which we define as receiving community members or folks that have been in the community longstanding or multiple generations in the United States, of really understanding an initiative to help bring people together to celebrate the diversity that exists within the receiving communities, but also the immigrant communities, which is Welcoming Week, which is actually done through our national partner, Welcoming America. So out of those sort of three big buckets, I think what has been really important is listening to community and understanding the needs and not making assumptions of what community needs or even what learner needs, right? So for example, I know some of the folks that I've worked with in the past have been really great at putting together listening sessions or just interviewing folks within the community or identifying trusted community leaders just to build that relationship and just understand what are some of the issues that folks are facing, but also how do people receive their information, right? So if we are assuming it's just putting a flyer out, just putting something on social media will bring people in, not necessarily. So like, how do you communicate? So I've heard that folks have used those unconventional like texting apps or advertising on the radio or putting a flyer in the doctor's office, of a trusted doctor's office, to get the word out of here are some of the things that we're offering. So I think it's a variety of ways. So I think for one, I think the most important thing I've learned is how do we work and listen with community in terms of what are some of the needs. And I think it goes with learners as well too, because not everyone learns the same. And we also have to have that historical context of if there has been trauma in the community or how folks receive information, how do we just better understand the history of the different community members or the folks that you're trying to engage?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And thinking back to my intro, I was talking about when you first met your partner, your spouse, your best friend, and you didn't know them, but you took the time to get to know them. And now you have this relationship that is a trusting relationship where you do know them deeply. And it makes sense that you would apply some of that same principles in figuring out the community needs. If you don't actually know the community that you're trying to serve, then you could offer something that doesn't resonate with them or isn't a need for them. Or you could market it in a way that they never receive it. They never see that message or receive that message. And so it makes a lot of sense to get to know the community. And you mentioned several ways that organizations could do that, which is really, really helpful. And yeah, to your point, the same applies for our learners. So just as we want to get to know the communities to figure out what those programs or services are that we offer as nonprofits, we also want to get to know our learners so that we know how to serve them, how they need or want to learn, what their biggest gaps or needs are. You all have a wide variety of learners that would be delivering the programs or services, and so they're going to have some specific learning needs. What was your process? How did you identify what the learners needed in order to deliver on these programs and services more effectively?
Another big piece too is sometimes we're not the expert, and how do we work with other organizations? So that partnership collaboration piece is really important. So there are some organizations or other agencies that are closer to the work than we are. So how do we lean in on them and truly have it be a collaborative effort of understanding some of those nuances or needs? So for example, I know that there was a local Y that partnered with a local mental health agency and really just wanting to better serve the community, but learning sort of some of the issues that are coming through, like as folks are coming into the organization and trying to find services and working with them to identify, here is a need, here's a gap around mental health first aid that's needed. How do we help build that free? Or how do we equip folks, volunteers, to be able to deliver on that as well? So I think one approach could be really leaning in on other partners and collaborators that have like a really closer pulse to what's happening and working with them to identify a plan to help support.
Do you wish you could connect with other nonprofit learning and development leaders? I know what it feels like to want someone to bounce ideas off of and to learn from, someone who really understands you and your work. Imagine if you could have a simple way to meet people in the field, ask questions, and share information. That's why I created the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective, where nonprofit, L&D, talent management, and DEI leaders can connect with each other quickly and easily in a virtual space. When you join this community, you will walk away with a new, diverse, and powerful network and a sounding board for your staff development needs. So if you're ready to exchange ideas and collaborate with your peers, come join the Nonprofit L&D Collective. I've seen organizations partner with external partners, I guess, vendors, whatever other organizations to bring in, like you're saying, maybe mental health first aid training, even internally, if you think about staff, sexual harassment training, a lot of times is something that you're partnering with another organization to offer. Child abuse prevention might be something that you partner to offer because your nonprofit might not be the expert in that particular area, but it's a need that your learners have. So that makes a lot of sense. And then you all are also creating training for your staff too. So you have the one avenue of let's identify the learner needs. Let's find the right partner that's closer to the work and can deliver that training to staff. But then when you're creating training, how do you go about figuring out what to create to further the programs and services?
For sure. So a lot of the projects that I'm involved in, we ensure that there's a space and place for the folks that are involved in to share input. So that can look like monthly meetings or a virtual space where they can connect and share some of their challenges or struggles or just some things that they are hoping to learn. I'm very big on always ending my meetings with what else is needed or what are some things that can help better support your work. So serving our program project participants in that regard. And based on that information, we try to build that into some of the check-ins that we have as a project team. So whether that's micro-learnings built into the meetings, or we build out a larger approach around like a pre-recorded webinar, or here are some best practices in these different areas. So I think it's a variety of different ways that we collect that information, whether that's through the actual meetings that we have or through surveying or through our sort of, what is it, the sort of virtual sharing space that we have that folks can share their thoughts.
Yeah. So that are you referring to the knowledge management platform, virtual sharing space? Is that, or what were you referring to?
So like we have private project spaces for different projects where people can post on like a bulletin board or some sort, or upload their own sort of files and tools and resources to share what they've been working. It to be a collaborative work project space.
Okay, great. So it sounds like then you're hearing directly from the learners through your monthly calls. You have something set up, an approach in place where you can connect with them on a regular basis. You're hearing what's really happening as they are preparing to or actually delivering programs and services, and then you can be responsive to that. So hearing directly from the learner is a great way to create and double check and provide resources and reinforce learning, because you can hear what those challenges and experiences are firsthand. It sounds like you also have the ability to run surveys, though that's another way to hear firsthand from learners. And a little bit different, obviously, because you don't necessarily have that two-way communication, but you're able to gather a lot of input in a single place through a survey. And then the virtual space that you're referring to is a great way for you to glean information, but if you are also sharing, it's a collaborative space, so they can learn from each other. And so they're able to share what they're doing, what's working, what's not working, and really have kind of that peer learning space virtually across the country. So as you think about kind of the approach that you've used, how do you feel like this approach has helped as you are thinking about your work, your goals, the impact you want to have with working with your American communities, and then supporting staff to help you achieve those goals?
Yeah, I think something with this approach, I think it's effective, but I think there's always room for improvement and ways that we can be more intentional with how we engage learners, but also how do we help provide the tools and resources to the learners who are then turning around and supporting their direct community as well. So I think of the trainers, how do we equip the trainers and then to turn around and train other folks, but also the ones that are directly impacting community. So I feel like it's a ripple effect. So what we do to provide those tools and resources for capacity building, how does that translate to working directly with community? And I think there's always, like I mentioned earlier, ways to just improve that process, whether that's really listening to the community and doing intentional focus groups or building relationships. I think a lot of this work is really relational. If we don't have trust within the community or trust within the folks that we're trying to help, like a lot of this work would be very not aligned with our values of an organization. So how do we ensure that we are doing our due diligence in building trust, building relationships, that we are being authentic in the way that we are trying to support and serve, and not coming in as sort of like, I've heard the term being saviristic around some of the community work. So I think, yeah. So I think really focusing on how do we just be intentional in a way that is authentic, that is really focusing on being inclusive.
Love that. Authentic, relationships, inclusive, all great benefits when you take an approach like this. Have you received any feedback from the learners that you're creating training for? And what does that look like?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is through the testing, right? And the piloting and seeing, okay, this is a tools or a rollout of some concepts to help support our learners. We typically do harvest sessions to bring everyone part of that project together to share their feedback and their growing pains, if any, and really also engage them in a sort of visioning exercise to think through what is next for this project, what's the next phase, and what is that component of working with and not for. So how do we work, really truly partner with the folks that are part of these different projects that I'm involved in to really get their input? Because at the end of the day, the folks that are implementing or testing or piloting the project, they're the ones that are really going to be reaching the community. So as folks that are helping to coordinate the learners or put together these learning solutions, like, we have to rely on their experiences to help inform how do we adjust or look at different ways of doing the work if it's not effective, if it's not working. So I think that feedback, that concept, it's, there are things that do not go how we had intended it to be. Like, what are some of the learnings from that? And how can we just really take that to help us inform the next iteration of how we do this work?
Yeah, I love that. The constant feedback loops. And it really is iterative. I know a lot of times in learning and development, we think about everything on a project basis. And so there's a start and a finish to a project. And there is some truth to that. But there's also this iterative process that is kind of amazing if you allow it to happen, because you can constantly get that feedback from learners, what's working, what's not working, and you can adapt and make things better even as you scale. I think sometimes that's iterative is a scary word when you think about scaling, but it is possible. And I love that you all are thinking about that and getting that feedback from staff as you go. Train, any final words of wisdom for a nonprofit learning and development person who is thinking about, how do I train my staff, my customer, whoever my learner is, to work with new American communities?
For sure. I think at the end of the day, it's like, how do we have this centered in the community and in the individual and the human aspect of it, and not be so bogged down in terms of the metrics and outcomes and all that. I think at the end of the day, we have to really listen and understand the human experience of learning. And I think some things that I learned through working with the New Americans community, like, I think for some folks, the word case management is pretty scary, but case management is just a way to just help track some of the needs, some of the goals that the individual person or learner may have, and how do we help them get to reach their goals? And it's not going to take overnight. There's not a start and finish. I think for some folks, they may argue, say, yes, there is, but I think if we're in the industry to help people and serve communities, that it's going to be an ongoing effort. So how do we ensure that we are helping people along the way to reach their goals, their whatever learning goals, their goals into how they want to be supported? So I think really looking at how do we put together these individual plans, i.e. sort of case management approaches, to center it around the individual and their goals. I think another thing that I've heard too is asset-based sort of case management, around not focusing on the deficits of the individual, but what are some of the strengths that they have? Oh, strength-based is what I've been hearing in the field. So how do we just look at that strength-based approach versus coming in from a deficit approach?
Great advice. Trang, thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course. No, thanks for having me, Heather. This is great.
We have so much to learn from each other, and it's one of the things I hope to bring to you as a Learning for Good listener. That's also why I created the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective over on LinkedIn. It's a place for us to share with and learn from one another, a powerful, diverse network of learning and development, talent management, and DEI leaders. We tackle relevant topics and learn from each other each week. Grab the link to the group in the show notes, and I'll see you there. Until next time on Learning for Good.
Hey friend, was this episode helpful for you? Did you like what you heard? Do you want more content like this? Here are three things you can do. Hit subscribe, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice, share this episode with a colleague, This means so much to me personally. I read every review, but it also helps me learn what content you like most so I can create more of what you want. All right, turn that Teams or Slack chat back on when you're ready, and I'll see you next time on Learning for Good.